So today we're talking about death by comfort. I've been threatening for years to write a book of this title, so this is much easier than writing a book. We're just going to talk about it. Death by comfort, right? So our comfort zone, right? We've heard about it all the time. And the thing about our comfort zone is what you want lies outside of your comfort zone. Joy, happiness, career success, fulfillment, living your dreams, none of that's in your comfort zone. It's all outside of your comfort zone. So you either have to get outside of your comfort zone or you have to embrace mediocrity. It's really that simple. Unless you've already done the work that your comfort zone is being uncomfortable and pushing the edge. But that is not the average person, right? That's a whole different thing. That's what we're aiming for, that becomes the new comfort zone, is pushing the edge, exploring what's possible for me as a human being. But that's not where most people are, right? So what you want is outside there. Anybody want to have on their tombstone, yep, he lived a mediocre life. Or she lived a mediocre life. Is that anyone aiming for that? Hopefully not, right?
I think just by the fact that we're here
makes us... Obviously, right. You don't want mediocrity. So to live up to your potential, to tap into your full potential, means we have to get out of our comfort zone. But we're addicted to our comfort zones, right? And our comfort zone really isn't even all that comfortable. So I would like to get rid of the term comfort zone and replace it with the term familiar zone. Because who you know yourself to be is your comfort zone, right? And if who you know yourself to be is the person who's in an unsatisfying relationship, that's not really comfortable, but it's familiar. And so you'll stay in it, because one of the strongest drives in human beings is to stay consistent with who you know yourself to be. To stay consistent with who you know yourself to be. And if we get outside of that, who we know ourselves to be, it's uncomfortable. So it's familiar. Or, you know, struggling to more month than money, struggling to pay the bills, that sort of thing. It's clearly not comfortable, but yet people will stay in that because it's familiar, because it's who they know themselves to be. So this comfort zone thing, this familiar zone. So I have, like, I don't know, what do you do to the ribs? Do you dislocate them, sprain them? It's very painful. I have a dislocated rib. And so if I like grunt in the middle of this talk, it's just my rib thing, and every once in a while it feels like I get punched in the back and I can't breathe.
So your ribs are out of their comfort zone.
So my rib is out of its comfort zone. But now here's the thing. Guess what I did last night with the dislocated rib?
I played volleyball.
I played volleyball.
How did I know
that? How did you know that? Because this is the comfort zone. This is the who you know yourself to be. Who I know myself to be is a person who plays volleyball when he can, right? So my schedule was free. My friends were playing. They needed me to have four, you know, because you can't play 2-on-2 with three people. I'm like, I'm going to go play. And as I'm leaving the house, I'm like, this is probably not a good idea. I went and played anyway, because it would have been more uncomfortable for me to not play than it was for me to go play with an injury. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because my identity said, play volleyball when you can. So to know my friends were playing, or that they couldn't play because I didn't come, was more painful, more uncomfortable to me than playing with an injured rib. So then I got home and could barely breathe, right? It wasn't a good plan. It's better today. But anyway, comfort zone, who you know yourself to be. So who you, right, Maxwell Maltz's quote, it's impossible to outperform your self-image. Who you know yourself to be. And some of what's going on in our head, some of who we know ourselves to be is useful. And then some of what's going on up there, some of who we know ourselves to be is head trash and limitation and junk and all kinds of stuff. But it doesn't matter. We still strive to stay consistent with who we know ourselves to be. And when we get outside of it, it makes us uncomfortable. So there's a fancy psychology name for that called cognitive disharmony. All right. So let's imagine this is like a kid's swimming pool here, this table, right? And I start splashing like this. Right? There's just going to be this consistent wave pattern, right? And it'll have an organization to it. and it'll be right, look nice and everything. Now, if all of a sudden Connie starts splashing this way, now we've just got chaos and things going every which way, right? And it's very different because there's a different frequency than what was already there. So here I know myself to be, there's waves going this way, all of a sudden this wave comes in this way because I'm all of a sudden being more successful than I know myself to be. I'm being busier than I know myself to be. I'm making more money than I know myself to be. Probably this dislocated rib has come about because I have decided to get back into shape. And so I've been exercising really hard lately. Guess what? With a dislocated rib, you can't really exercise very hard. Right? So is it possible that I attracted this experience in from this cognitive disharmony perspective? Absolutely. Right? So the easiest way to think about this cognitive disharmony is to think about a thermostat. Right? There's a thermostat on that wall right there. And a thermostat's job is to keep things within a predefined range of what is acceptable. Right? And if it gets out of that range, there's an auto-correct mechanism. Right? You don't have to do anything. It happens. If my house gets too cold, the furnace turns on. If my house gets too hot, the air conditioner turns on. Right? I don't have to get out of my chair and do anything. It just happens. Auto-correct mechanism. Well, that same auto-correct mechanism lives in every one of our heads. And so when we get out of sight that what's acceptable zone, whether it's above or below, for purposes of today, we're just going to mostly talk about above, an auto-correct mechanism kicks in that's designed to drive us back into the familiar zone because it's who we know ourselves to be. And by definition, if this is who I know myself to be, it's safe because it's familiar. Versus, oh my gosh, who would I be if that changed? I wouldn't know who I am. Oh my gosh, that freaks me out. Right? And it can drive us back a bunch of different ways. Right? My rib injury. Just before this lunch, I was talking with a lady on the phone, a client of mine, and we ended up talking about the same topic. And she said, oh my gosh, every time my business gets to that next level, something happens to me medically. Right? Ovarian cysts. I don't know. She mentioned like 5 or 6 different things. And she's like, oh my gosh, like it connected the dots for her, right? Because that's the body saying, let's move us back into that familiar zone. Or I've got another client who has reached unprecedented results in her business. And now she's feeling this extreme drive to take a break, to relax because she's been working really hard. I deserve a break. Need to play a little bit more golf here. Well, guess what's going to happen if she keeps taking that break? She's going to be right back in the familiar zone. And then I do my weird rib thing, right? Right back in the familiar zone. It's an incredibly strong drive. Now, here's the thing, right? Last night, if instead of volleyball it was cleaning the garage, my rib would have hurt too bad to clean the garage, right? It would have been a great excuse. But since it was who I know myself to be, it was just an inconvenience that I dealt with. So this is important on so many levels. First of all, people here who've got businesses where you build teams, this is huge for supporting your people because they're going to go through this. And it's obviously relevant for all of us because we're growing as human beings and we want better in our lives, so we're going to go through this. And the one thing that happens very often with this is people think that other people don't have this. And therefore, they think that, oh, like, I'm just lame, I'm weak of character, No, it's a human being thing. But different people have learned to respond differently to cognitive dissonance. And that's all. If we experience cognitive dissonance and we retreat back to our comfort zone, then nothing changes. And if we experience cognitive dissonance and go, yay, I'm going for it anyway, then life continues to expand and the thermostat quickly resets itself so that we're now living in this environment where more is possible for us. I don't think I said that very clearly. Did that make sense? Yeah. Right? So cognitive dissonance is never going to leave your life. It's never going to leave your life. It's part of being a human being, but we can choose how we respond to it. So here's a little flow chart, right? In life, we experience discomfort. It could be thinking about calling that person on your chicken list. It could be, oh, Anita and I just had a fight, and really the thing to do would be to talk to her, but, oh, that scares me because I don't like confrontation, so instead I'm going to ignore it, right? I mean, it could be a million different things, right? But you know the feeling when you're outside your comfort zone, right? When we're experiencing that discomfort, at that moment in time, automatically you make a choice. And it's a A or B sort of choice. Either you shrink and you retreat, or you choose to lean into the discomfort and be bold. That's it. It's one of those two. You either seek comfort or you stay present in the discomfort. And almost everybody is conditioned to seek comfort, which means nothing is ever going to change, right? Einstein's wonderful quote, insanity is, anybody want to finish that one for me? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. That's what we do every time that we retreat, because what you want is not back there. What you want is over there. It's over the fence. We got to climb over that fence of discomfort to get to what we want. But we're so conditioned to retreat. Why? Because we are. Because, I don't know, it's just what people do. We've learned to have this weird relationship with our comfort zone. But we can change that habit where we learn to embrace that discomfort, where we learn to be bold and take action anyway. So a couple things about retreating. Number one, obviously the insanity thing, it doesn't get you what you want. Number two, it cements in mediocrity, right? It just affirms that, hey, I'm not worth it. I'm not worth backing my own dreams, right? Brené Brown's book, Daring Greatly, talks about learning to celebrate courage, right? Getting outside your comfort zone versus that shrinking and saying, hey, I'm not worth backing myself up, right? Getting a no in the sales process is a form of self-love. Does this make sense? Because if I don't ask Jacqueline to work with me, then clearly I'm not owning my own value. I'm not saying my dreams and my goals are worth it, that I'm worth making myself uncomfortable enough to ask her if she wants to work with me, because she might say no and that might hurt my feelings. Right? So it's me not asking is me not loving myself. And if I ask her, I've now done my part because I can't control her response, but I have loved myself because I'm going for what I want. Right? This is huge. So not loving yourself is, or not being bold, not taking action, is embracing mediocrity. And embracing mediocrity automatically means we're crapping on our own dreams. Can't think of a better word than that, right? So it's a pretty brutal thing to do. And the third thing with that is there's this part inside you that knows you can do better, that knows you just let yourself off the hook, right? That nagging inner voice. So then you're being disappointed in yourself. And does anybody think being disappointed in yourself is a great success strategy?
No.
A way to live a happy, fulfilled life? Of course not. But that's going to happen every single time we seek comfort. There's that little voice inside of us, that little part of us inside of us, our soul, whatever you want to call it, that knows I could have done better there. That's not really what I wanted to do. That wasn't the right thing to do. And so now there's that lousy feeling about yourself and law of attraction, right? What you put out there is what comes back to you. Dennis, grab a plate if you're hungry. What you want, what you put out there is what comes back to you, right? So if I'm putting out lousy feelings because I'm disappointed in myself, then I'm not in the position to attract good into my life, right? The consequences of this are quite severe. Now, the good news is that we can change our relationship to discomfort. This is a learned thing, so we can change it. We can learn to embrace discomfort. We can learn to get excited about discomfort, right? Because personal growth starts with discomfort. Growth starts with discomfort. So if we just experience a discomfort and go, oh my gosh, here's an opportunity for me to grow. Isn't that awesome? Here's an opportunity for me to grow. Or, looking at it this way, discomfort means that I'm up against my own personal glass ceiling. Well, and don't you want what's on the other side of the glass ceiling? So this is an excellent indicator that I'm close. And now it's to persevere. It's to lean into the discomfort and do it anyway. Right? Discomfort is my friend. Everybody say that out loud. Discomfort is my friend. Did anybody throw up in their mouth a little bit? If so, that means there's some work to do there on changing our relationship to discomfort. Because does that make sense that we want to be able to say that and have that be totally true? Discomfort is my friend. It means I'm expanding my world. I'm expanding my field. What's the prayer of Jabez? Anybody know that off the top of your head?
And he called on the God of Israel. Oh, that you would bless me indeed and enlarge my territory.
Enlarge my territory. Thank you. That's the phrase I was looking for. I am enlarging my territory. I am enlarging. That's what discomfort means, is you're about to enlarge your territory. It means you're about to turn that thermostat up to a higher range. And by gosh, isn't that a good thing? Isn't that what you want? So discomfort is my friend. Discomfort is my friend. Life happens outside of our familiar zone, outside of our comfort zone. What you want lives outside of your comfort zone. The business of your dreams lives outside your comfort zone. The relationship of your dreams lives outside your comfort zone. All right, I have a client who, let's see, what's the simple way to tell this story? She's got a direct sales business, so she's got a team. And there was a conflict with another person on her team, or a potential conflict. And she knew this could be a potential conflict. And she does not like conflict. She's conflict averse. So instead of just calling this person and going, hey, this thing is going on and it could be a little bit awkward. What do we want to do about it? She did nothing, right? She sought comfort in the moment. Well, guess what happened? This thing blew up into a 5-alarm fire and has all kinds of drama. That's not only derailed, that's derailed several people's businesses and made her feel lousy and all kinds of stuff, because the easy path often isn't the easy path, right? Exercising. If you don't feel like exercising, it's hard to make yourself go exercise, but the benefits of having a healthy body down the road, right? You know, having a body that doesn't work is not the easy path, right? So taking care of ourselves in the moment is a harder choice, but in the long run, it's the easier choice, right? But when seeking comfort is our primary driver, our primary criteria for decision-making, oh, that's a really good way of saying this. When seeking comfort is your primary criteria for your decision-making, you're going to make a lot of really lousy decisions. And oh, by the way, this lady I was talking about, the same thing had happened a few weeks beforehand or something very similar, and we had already talked about this, and then she repeated the thing again because of her addiction to comfort. Right? I'm like, didn't we just have this conversation? She's like, yeah. Because of our addiction to comfort is not your friend. So here's the great irony of this. People, when we seek comfort, we don't get to have it. When you seek comfort, when comfort is your primary objective, you don't get to have comfort. When you're willing to forego comfort and embrace discomfort, you get to have a lot of comfort. All right? Does that make sense? All right? So the lady I was talking about, if she had embraced discomfort in the moment, down the road there with what unfolded, she would have experienced a bunch more comfort. Right, doing what it takes to grow your business requires us to embrace discomfort. And then you grow your business and you have the comfort that financial freedom and financial security can provide. And if we just embrace comfort and don't get outside of our comfort zone, then we're living paycheck to paycheck for the rest of our lives, which by definition is not a comfortable thing, right? So when you pursue comfort, you don't get to have it. When you embrace discomfort, you get to have all kinds of comfort in your life. The tough conversations with our boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, partner, whatever label that person has, right? Those are hard to do in the moment. But in the long run, do they help you build a better relationship? Yeah. And if you don't have them, what happens? You get a divorce lawyer, right? So learning to value the role of discomfort in your life. Learning to appreciate discomfort. Learning to almost seek it out. You know, because that just means you're pushing the edge. That you, if you're seeking discomfort, not like sitting on pins or something weird discomfort, if you're seeking discomfort, it means you're pushing yourself to really maximize what's possible for you. Right? So if you're not living on the edge, what's the saying? If you're not living on the edge, you're not living. No, there's a better expression. But I can't remember it, so anyway. I'm sure there's a better one. Oh, that hurts my rib. Awesome. Okay, so discomfort, yahoo, I'm up against my glass ceiling. So any area of our life that we want to change, it's really... first of all, you're never going to feel like it, right? If you have a choice between making phone calls or going for a bike ride, playing with your kid, watching some TV, knitting if that's your hobby, what are you going to feel more like doing? Scrubbing the bathroom floor with a toothbrush beats me over making phone calls, right? Or exercising. Let's see, eat a bowl of ice cream or exercise? There's a tough one. Yeah, I'd rather eat the bowl of ice cream, right? And on, right? We're not going to feel like it. So, I'm going to be a little rude here. Screw your feelings. Do it anyway. Richard Branson wrote a book, Screw It, Just Do It, right? Anybody be okay with having Richard Branson's life? Yeah.
Well, right. He probably does things I don't want to do.
Probably, but, right, there's a man who has learned to embrace discomfort. Yeah. And he's got, it's not like he's my buddy, but from what I can tell, it looks like he's genuinely happy, genuinely fulfilled, genuinely loves his life, and boy, does a man know how to build businesses, right? Because he's learned to embrace discomfort, he's learned to seek discomfort. He's learned to do it regardless of how it feels. Just do it anyway. You're never going to feel like it. Now, never is a strong word. Sometimes you will. But in general, the stuff we need to do to grow ourselves isn't going to be our number one free time priority, like choice, right? So do it anyway. So this is tough love. We have to learn to be our own best friend. And what we've currently defined to be our own best friend is a really lousy definition. Because our own best friend doesn't let us off the hook. Our own best friend doesn't say, oh, Judy, you don't need to exercise today. It's okay. You can start again next year. Right? Our own best friend doesn't say that. No, our own best friend says, hey, exercise today because this is why exercise is important to you, and here's what you're up to, and you aren't going to get there if you don't exercise today, so just get started, right? Tough love. So we're anybody besides me really good at letting yourself off the hook?
No.
Yeah. So
that's my best part.
There's room to redefine what it means to be your own best friend. And your own best friend has you make calls for your business when you don't feel like it. Your own best friend tells you to stay home from playing volleyball when you have a dislocated rib, right? Your own best friend has you exercise when you don't want. Your own best friend has you have those tough conversations even when you don't want to. All right? So the tough love piece is to, and force is such a strong word, but I can't think of a better word. You have to force yourself to get out of your routine.
Challenge.
Force. Put a gun to your own head. I don't know, whatever. To get out of your own routines. You have to force yourself to feel the discomfort and do it anyway. I'm pretty sure it was Winston Churchill who said this. Courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is taking action in spite of your fear. Right? Tough love is forcing yourself to be courageous. Right? Because we, you know, we do stuff in our head, and so there's people we want to call for our businesses that just scare the bejesus out of us for whatever reasons, right? So courage is calling them anyway. In a situation where we normally wouldn't ask for what we want, it's asking for what we want anyway. What about maybe there's something you want from your boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse, sweetheart, whatever we call them, and you've asked many times and you haven't gotten it? Do you ask again, or do you just resign yourself to, well, it's fine, I can live without it? Right? No, courage is to ask again. And let's bring in that insanity thing. Think of a different way of asking that's going to make it more likely to get the result that you want. Right? That word fine, it's fine. It's fine. I'm out of shape, it's fine. I don't have as much money in the bank as I want, it's fine. Right? You know, you should always turn your phones off before a meeting like this. It's fine. No, fine means you're settling. Fine equals mediocre. Fine is not living up to your potential, right? Fine is a word that keeps you in your comfort zone. It's not, we could probably make an acronym. Familiar, I'm not going to waste our time on this. It's familiar. It's not great. It's not what you want. It's acceptable. It's fine. No, it's not. All right, so we got to force ourselves out of fine. We have to force ourselves about being uncomfortable and doing it anyway. We have to force ourselves to do whatever it is, even when we don't feel like it. Even when we don't feel like it. We have to force ourselves to do what is the right thing to do. So there's a forcing yourself to do it even when you don't feel like it. There's a wonderful book called One Small Step Can Change Your Life, The Kaizen Way by Robert Maurer, M-A-U-R-E-R. And in forcing yourself to do it even when you don't feel like it, the nutshell of that book is break it down into a small enough piece that it doesn't cause resistance. Right, so I was using Judy as this example about exercising when you don't feel like it. So if Judy just commits to exercising for 5 minutes or some really small chunk of time, chances are that's not going to feel so overwhelming, right? That's not going to bring her resistance up versus thinking, I need to do an hour's worth of exercise. Oh my gosh, I don't have the time or the energy or the inclination. No, can I exercise? Does anybody think exercising for 5 minutes today would just be impossible? To only exercise, right? No, right? We laugh at that. That's incredibly doable. Anybody think making one phone call to a prospect or one follow-up call would be just beyond your capabilities today? No, we can all do that, right? So the thing is, this is called energy of activation. It's hard to get started. So we want to make it as easy on ourselves as possible to get started. So if I set out to make 15 phone calls and now I freak myself out and I'm overwhelmed, I'm like, I can't do that. What do we do when we feel overwhelmed? We shut down. We do nothing. We have a margarita. Right? It's happy hour somewhere, right? So that's 5 o'clock somewhere. Watch Gilligan's Island.
Oh, yeah.
oh, whatever, right? We don't, we're not proactive and productive when we get overwhelmed. So if 15 calls overwhelms me, then the secret to dealing with overwhelm is to break things down into bite-sized pieces. And it doesn't matter how small we have to break it down. We just want to get to this point where we feel relief instead of resistance, right? That laughable, well, gosh, of course I can do that, right? You're, let's pretend your kitchen is just a mess, like the messiest it's ever been. And you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to clean that up. Can you wash one plate? Does anybody think like, oh my gosh, there's no way I could wash one plate? I mean, that's pretty ridiculous, right? But what's going to happen when you wash one plate? You think you're going to then walk out of the kitchen? No, you're probably going to wash. You're probably going to wash the plate next to it, and before you know it, you've created a clean zone, and there's progress, right? So energy of activation. Get started. Once we right, and thermodynamics. An object at rest tends to stay at rest. An object in motion tends to stay in motion. So we just need to get ourselves in motion. And as long as we've used the example of phone calls, because phone phobia is a very relevant thing for people, make your first call an easy one. Call somebody who's already a satisfied customer or client and just check in with them and see how they're doing. Right? So I'm not even trying to sell. I'm just, Judy's already my client. Hey, Judy, just seeing how you're doing today. We have a little chat. Now it's so easy to make my next call. Right? Make it easy. Whatever it takes to make it easy to get started. Sean Acor, I learned about the happiness, the energy of activation from him. He's got a book called The Happiness Advantage. Wonderful book. Anyway, he talks about this in there, and he used this example of he wanted to play his guitar more. And so he did the thing we've probably all done where you put that 30 days to create a new habit thing, so there's the calendar with the check marks. So after the first month, there was like 3 check marks. I'm like, okay, that didn't work. Right? And Sean Acor is a PhD psychologist, right? And then it didn't work for him. And then he realized this energy of activation concept, right? In order to go play his guitar, he had to go into the spare bedroom and open up the closet and get out his guitar case and take his guitar out of the case before he could play, right? That's a lot of stuff to do. So what he did is he went and bought a guitar stand and he put it in the hallway. So now it's harder to walk around the guitar than it is to pick it up and play. Guess what? He started playing his guitar every day. Because of that, because he made it easy, he made it simple. He made it ridiculously simple to get engaged. So those things in our business, in our lives, that it's hard to do, how can you make it simple to get started? And another client who wanted to read more. And instead of reading, she would watch TV. So I said, put your book on top of the remote. Because if you have to go upstairs to the nightstand to get your book, you're going to watch TV. Put the book on top of the remote. And then even if you just read 2 pages of something useful, obviously we're not talking about Danielle Steele or something, no, or your personal growth book, that's still going to be putting useful stuff in your mind. And then if you want to turn on the TV, you've at least read 2 pages. And if you read more, hey, that's great too, right? Energy of activation. Make it easy on yourself. So again, where in your business can you use this strategy to get some of those things done that you need to get done, right? Really small pieces that are easy to engage. Get yourself started and then keep going. So that's an easy way to deal with the don't feel like it. Make that bad feeling as small as possible. Okay, so another thing with this being bold and doing it anyway, right? Being bold is courage, right? Doing it even though you don't feel like it. Doing what you know to be the right thing. So what we need, let me back up a step. I'm getting ahead of myself, right? So the little flow chart diagram there, right? Moment of discomfort immediately followed by a decision to either seek comfort or be bold. Well, that happens lickety-split, right? It's not a slow, let's think about this thing. And so in the knee-jerk reaction, if our habit is to seek comfort, we're going to seek comfort. So in order to have an alternative to this, we need to create some policies and procedures for our life. We need to pre-decide what's the right thing to do here. So that when that happens in the moment, there's this part of our consciousness that goes, wait, I know there's another way. I know what's the right thing to do here. And if we haven't thought that out before, then we're just going to default to seeking comfort. So, you know, this is a sit down and do this later exercise. Think about some of the things in your life that push your buttons and decide beforehand what's the appropriate response. So when somebody cuts you off on the highway or you experience rude driving, if you know beforehand, if you've pre-decided beforehand that the ideal response to that situation is not to give them the one-fingered salute and lay on your horn, international communication, but instead the ideal response is for me to take a deep breath and let it go and bless them or something like that, right? Which one of those two is going to serve me better? Obviously, right? So if I know what my ideal response is, then there's a part of my consciousness that's going to, it's going to make me so much easier to go there. And it'll make it easier for me catching myself that I'm not quite going the right way to course correct instead of just being all in on being road rage. But let's take our businesses. Anybody ever heard anyone say, well, I'm interested, but that's out of my price range? Or some objection of that nature, right? So if we seek comfort, then what do? We retreat. Oh, bummer. Okay, thanks. See you later. You want me to pay for your coffee since money's tight? I'm out of here. That's not the growing your business response, right? So what's a better response to that? Well, you get to answer that question for yourself. Right? Predefined policies and procedures of here's how I live boldly. Here's how I embrace the situations that make me uncomfortable. Here's the desired result. When you have that little blow up with your sweetheart, right? My seek comfort response is just to tune her out. But that doesn't ever give me what I want. I've tried it like a million times now. It doesn't build connection. It doesn't build affection. Not once, right? So clearly, that's never going to change. So I need to do something different there. So if I pre-decide what the appropriate response is, now I know what to do. Hey, honey, I'm sure neither of us want to be where we're at right now. What can we do to create harmony? Well, that would be way more useful than retreating, than tuning her out, than running away, which is my pre-programmed comfort response in that situation. Go play volleyball. Volleyball! It's 5:00. Somebody's playing volleyball somewhere. Got to go. Yeah, no, that's not going to get me what I want, right? So, I mean, all over our lives, there's areas that habitually make us feel uncomfortable. Right, that are habitually outside who we know ourselves to be. How many people get uncomfortable when somebody tries to give you a gift? Right? Well, probably some work to be done there, right? Because has anybody ever here gotten a check from signed by God? No? No? It always has somebody else's name in this. Yeah, somebody who thought they were is a different story. Yeah, it always has somebody's name in the subject line, right? Because God works through people. Good comes into your life through people. So if I have a problem with people being good to me, then whether you call it God or the universe, I have limited how God and the universe can contribute to me. I've limited how much good can come into my life. So boy, there's an opportunity where there's room for a new policy and procedure. Right? Instead of being uncomfortable, what if I take a deep breath and say, what if I do deserve this? And then graciously say, thank you. Wouldn't that serve you better? And on, I mean, areas all over our life. Pre-decide, because this is Pavlovian conditioning, knee-jerk response. It's going to happen. If your habit is to seek comfort, you'll seek comfort. And so in order to change this habit, where the new habit is to be bold and to embrace discomfort, we need things like this along the way to support us in doing that. Does that make sense? And really, this is your, if you choose to accept it, this is your homework assignment. Write down a whole bunch of policies and procedures for your life and for your business so that the areas that produce discomfort, you now know what's the ideal response. And knowing it makes it so much easier to take it, so much easier to course correct when you're off. And oh, by the way, you won't do this every time because we're human, and it's okay. Because you know what? Life is amazingly good at giving you another chance. So you're not even going to have to wait very long to have that same button pushed again, or you get another chance. Right? Because life. So here's the thing, too, with all of this, is Einstein said the most important decision you're ever going to make is, do you live in a friendly universe or a hostile universe? Right? So if you live in a hostile universe, that's job number one, you need to move. Right? Because the best outcome in a hostile universe is to survive without getting hurt too bad. That's not really a very inspiring future. In a friendly universe, everything's possible, right? Joy, fulfillment, happiness, wealth, abundance, prosperity, everything. So in a friendly universe, that means whether you call it God, whether you call it the universe, whether you call it the quantum field, whatever you call it, is conspiring to help you have the best life you can possibly have. That's its job, is to help you have the best life you can possibly have. And in order for any of us to have the best life we can possibly have, we have to let go of limitation and head trash and our buttons. Right? These discomfort buttons. And here's the thing, right? If Roy keeps pushing my button here, well, I can put a hit out on him and get rid of him, or hope he moves to Tahiti, or all these sort of things, and I can make it all about him. But you know what? That's not true. Because it's, whose button is it? It's mine. And so if my arch nemesis Roy moves to Tahiti, somebody else is going to start pressing that same button because the universe is helping me to be the best person I can possibly be. And so when we look outside of ourselves and blame, oh, my life would be perfect if only this changed, we're totally deluding ourselves. If it's your button, the best way to make sure that that button never gets pushed again is not to be in this weird defensive mode. And no, it's to disconnect the button and throw it away. And then it doesn't matter if Roy stays here or moves to Tahiti, because I've taken care of my button, which means I've learned and grown, which means I've embraced discomfort and expanded my territory. I love that phrase, expanded my territory. Right? There's more possible for me. I can live larger, bolder, more joyously, more fulfilled, because I've done that work. I'm not even sure how we got on this little tangent here, but This is huge, right? If Roy's going to tea, if it's your button, it's your responsibility. So take care of it, right? So life will show us where we get to grow, and if we view perspective, if we view those things happening as a curse, a problem, or whatever, just like if we view being uncomfortable a curse or a problem, then nothing's gonna change. And when we view discomfort and our buttons getting pushed as a good thing, then life becomes an amazing thing. Helen Keller's quote, life is an exciting adventure or it's nothing at all. That's how you live Helen Keller style, is by embracing this stuff and going, yay, this is good. This is good because of what it makes possible for me. right? And you know, if you go to the gym and there's a particular piece of equipment in the gym that you don't really like, but it's part of your routine. So let's just use the word the Stairmaster because I can't think of anything else, right? If you tried to tell me that Stairmasters are evil, we'd think you're a little cuckoo, right? Ooh, cuckoo, cuckoo. Because, no, it's just a piece of exercise equipment, right? But if we view those people in our lives who are pressing our buttons as just a piece of exercise equipment, helping us to grow, helping us to get stronger, isn't that a much, or those not necessarily people and situations, because that's what's happening, but we're going to engage with the whole thing differently if I see it that way. Hey, that's just a piece of exercise equipment. It's time for a hard workout here. Versus, oh my gosh, they're the bane of my existence. Oh, poor me. All right. So that's embracing discomfort and the bigger picture. Again, pursuing comfort in the moment so often, I bet you we could say almost always, leads to discomfort down the road. Does that seem true? I'm sure there's times where pursuing comfort in the moment doesn't lead to discomfort down the road, but as a general rule of thumb, it does. Oh, one other thing, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard that feeling the discomfort and doing it anyway, right? Acting, getting into action. So we often have these little God whispers or intuitions or, you know, the little thought pops in your, whatever you want to call it, the little thought pops in your head, oh, I should call Darcy, or I should do this, or I should do that, right? And I'd love to call that the God whisper. That's God whispering, right? And we need to take action on that, right? Opportunity knocks, but we still have to open the door. But how often do we let our comfort zone discourage us from acting on that impulse? And where I was going with this is I heard that if you don't take action on an impulse like that within 5 seconds, it dies. Now, I don't know if that's an urban myth or actual laboratory data on that, but it seems pretty true to me, right? 5 seconds is pretty darn quick. Yeah, because you forget about it. It dies.
It comes back and
kind of
smacks you in the face the next time.
Yeah. Well, you know, and if you... Well, and if you've ever been around a campfire and it pops and an ember pops out, it's you know, if it lands on something, it would immediately start a fire. But if it lands in dirt, within a couple seconds, it's not glowing anymore, right? So it's the same thing. When that God whisper occurs, if we don't take action, it dies. But to take action usually has us be out of our comfort zone. It certainly has us be out of our routine, right? And taking action could be, I don't have time to do anything with this right now, but at least I make a note. Like, oh, call Jennifer. You know, if it pops into my head and I'm in a meeting to call Jennifer, obviously I can't call her right now, but call her as soon as I can. Or take a note, do anything you can to breathe life into that, to throw some kindling on that spark so that it can burst into flame. And so in policies and procedures, wouldn't that be a pretty awesome policy and procedure to have in place? That whenever possible, I act within 5 seconds. Or do something to breathe life into it. And if we think about our lives when we have acted on it, how many times have you got that impulse to call somebody and you call them and it's like the perfect time for them? Anybody ever had that happen a lot? I mean, it's amazing, right? They're like, oh my gosh, I was thinking about you. Or, oh, I needed to ask you this. Or, you know, like you're able to provide something for them that they needed. Right, because as always, there's so many things we can tie into anything, right? So the what you want is your job, but how that happens is God's job, right? We can't make coincidences happen. That's God's job, right? So anyone who is in your life, God arranged the details for that person to be in your life, whether they're a friend or a client or a customer, right? God put you and them at the Chamber of Commerce at the same time. God put you and them in the line at Starbucks at the same time. God put you and them in preschool, the same preschool at the same time. Whatever, right? And so something like that, God's done his part. He said, Jennifer's got this thing going on. Jonathan, call her because you can be of assistance to her. And then God goes, okay, I've done my part. And then Jennifer thinks of calling me but goes, oh, I can't bother Jonathan. And I think and go, oh, I just don't do phone calls. And then God goes, hey, knuckleheads. God doesn't, thankfully God doesn't say that. God, but now God has to go back to work. Right? This is the GPS analogy. Right? You're driving, you make a wrong turn. Your GPS doesn't start cursing at you. The GPS doesn't threaten to quit if you don't start doing a better job. The GPS doesn't scold. It just recalibrates. Right? Okay, now based on this, here's what we need to do to get there. And if I make 10 more wrong turns, the GPS is never going to quit on me. It's just going to keep recalibrating, right? So that's what God in the universe does. So here's this thing where everything is lined up for me to contribute to Jennifer, and then who knows, maybe that would even end up putting money in my pocket and all this. It's all there. And then one of us doesn't act on that God whisper. Now God goes, okay, recalibrate. And then whether it's somebody else who can deliver to Jennifer what she needs or someone else that can deliver money to me, it's got to recalibrate. And God will do that over and over again, but that's the hard way. Right? What if it can be easy? Hey, call Jennifer means call Jennifer. Right? If you had your special cell phone and it rang, God here, call Jennifer. Bye. Would you argue? Hey, bad time for me, big guy. No. You would call. I hope, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what God's already doing. And we don't listen. I know I've a little room for improvement on this myself, but this is part of my new policies and procedures for my own life, right? Is when the God whisper happens, do stuff. And so it happened several times yesterday, and I reached out and I contacted some people because the God whisper happened and I had this new policy and procedure in place. And so I did my part and I reached out and connected with them or sent them an email or whatever, but I took action, right? So anybody not want to add that to their policies and procedures? Seems like a good universal one. Yeah. So this whole cognitive dissonance, death by comfort thing is huge in our lives. Right, and earlier I used Maxwell Maltz's quote of it's impossible to outperform your self-image, but it is possible to upgrade your self-image. And to upgrade your self-image, we, again, have to get outside of our comfort zone of who we know ourselves to be. There's no getting around discomfort, right? So that's the thing that we have to drill into our head. Discomfort is not optional. Because there's going to be discomfort either because we're staying in our comfort zone, which means life is mediocre. And mediocre is, by definition, not comfortable, right? It's familiar, but it's not comfortable. And there's that inner part of us that knows we can be doing better. So that's guaranteed discomfort. And then getting outside of our comfort zone is guaranteed discomfort. So discomfort is inevitable. It's not optional. It's inevitable. But what is totally under our control is the suffering and how we respond to discomfort, right? If I suffer around discomfort, then nothing's going to change, right? And I'm going to retreat as quick as I can and create discomfort that way. And if I choose to embrace discomfort, to change my relationship to discomfort, to be excited about discomfort, to know it means my life has taken a leap for the better, then, oh my gosh, then discomfort is a good thing. Discomfort is my, what did we say earlier? Discomfort is my friend? Yeah, so everybody say, discomfort is my friend again. Does that feel stronger, truer for anybody? Yeah, and what we want to do is we want to continue to reinforce that discomfort is where growth starts. Discomfort is where your amazing life starts. And without it, you don't get what you want. Well, thank you all for being here. We'll be here next month. I have no idea yet what we'll be talking about, but we'll be here. So see you then. And in the meantime, I wish you extreme discomfort.
Thank you.